On Sunday evenings, at this time, we do the Ein Yaakov. The Ein Yaakov is a work that was written at the same time, a little bit before the Shulchan Aruch, the Codex, Rav Yosef Karo. Rav Yosef Karo even quotes from the Ein Yaakov. The Ein Yaakov basically takes the stories, the Agadic parts of the Talmud, and distills everything else from the Talmud. So it's a very enjoyable learning that people have always learned. The Balabatim have always learned throughout our history. The work is approximately a little bit over 600 years old. And we are learning the Ein Yaakov on the first tractate, on tractate Brachot, and we're up to page Ein Hei Amud Beis. We have photocopies. It should say on the top right, page 150. And the Talmud had discussed different things that a person should do that we expect from a person on his best behavior. So it said a person shouldn't stand in the marketplace and talk to a woman, even if it's his wife or his daughter or his sister, because people don't always know who his relatives are. So they might think he's just talking to a woman out there, and what's he doing talking to someone else's wife so amicably? A person shouldn't be the last one to enter the Beis Medrash. And we said that's like if you're walking around with your talis at 11 o'clock in the morning and everyone thinks, oh, what a bum, he sleeps late. So a person shouldn't give a bad name to people who learn in yeshiva. A person shouldn't partake of the parties of the Am Haaretz, because then he might end up, if you party with them, then he'll end up being one of them, before long. They'll get him used to their way of life. So this is where we left off, in the middle of this quote. Another piece of advice our sages said is you shouldn't take big footsteps. When a person takes big footsteps, so then that the Talmud says, I didn't get the note.
I put it in the paper, the desk.
On the desk? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Call two. Vali of Psiya Psiya Gasa, a person shouldn't take big footsteps. Damar Mar, because we're taught, Psiya Gasa notel techad mechameshmot mimori nav shel adam. Taking big steps, the Talmud says, causes the light in one's eyes to dim. One of 500. Maitakante, so the Talmud asks, okay, so how do you fix it? You didn't know this Gemara. You took these big steps as you were walking, and now the light of one's eye dimmed, whatever that means. So the Talmud says, lehadaled bekedusha de beishimshe. The key to getting it back is take some of the wine that they make Kiddush on Friday night in Shul. In Chutzars they make Kiddush in Shul on Friday night. Here in Israel, we don't have that custom. But in Chutzars, Friday night in Shul, they make Kiddush. That's for the guests, for the people who couldn't afford wine. So you take some of that, you dab it on your eyes. Vali alech bekomaz kufa. A person shouldn't walk fully erect in a way that's too proud. Dam amal, for we're taught, kol alech bekomaz kufa. Whoever walks with fully erect in a proud way, it's as though he's pushing God's feet out of the world, because we're supposed to be in recognition. The verse says that God's honor is throughout earth, and that's the idea of wearing a yarmulke. Why do we wear a yarmulke? Yarmulke comes from the word yarei me eloka, fear of God. The yarmulke, the kippah that we wear on our head, is a recognition that there's one above. When a person walks in a fully erect stance, he's all proud. He runs the world. He's ignoring the existence of the Creator. So our sages said you shouldn't even walk four footsteps that way. Amar Rabba Bar Bachana, you guys have the place? Now we're up to Daf Mem Dalid in the Talmud. This corresponds to Daf Mem Dalid in the Ein Yaakov. It's the last paragraph on page 150. You guys have it? Amar Rabba Bar Bachana Kavazina Batrid Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Bar Bar Chana says the following story. When I walked after Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yochanan is the rabbi who composed the Jerusalem Talmud, the disciple of Rabbi Yanai, the teacher of Rabbi Elazar ben Pedatz. Rabbi Yochanan buried all 10 children in his lifetime. Rabbi Yochanan saw all of his kids die until the smallest one fell into a boiling vat of hot water, and he saw the kid boiled to death before his eyes. So Rabbi Yochanan contended with terrible hardships, and he was also the great leader of the Jewish people, an extraordinarily beautiful person who compiled the Jerusalem Talmud. He lived here in Israel. So Rabbi Bar Bar Chana said, when I walked after Rabbi Yochanan lemechal perot ginosar, we would eat the great fruits of ginosar. And here we have a fantastic example of a piece of the Talmud which we don't understand what it says. It seems like a fantastic story. And we know that this story is a code for a secret of the Kabbalah. If you guys know what Kabbalah is, the Zohar. You guys heard of that? Yeah. Kabbalah is the secret Jewish philosophy that was encased in Midrashic terms. Meaning, when you open the Zohar seems to be like a regular Midrash, just written in Aramaic. Read the Zohar. The Zohar is like Midrash Rabbah. All kinds of fantastic Midrashim. But we have a tradition that the secrets of the Zohar is the secrets understandings of Jewish philosophy, Jewish metaphysics. You want to understand the secrets of the world, that's you have to have a tradition of what's behind the Zohar. What's behind all these stories? The rabbis took secret concepts and encased them in simple form. So the common folk read it and they think, oh, that's a nice story. Here's an example of such a nice story where the Talmud tells you something, you read it, you say, wait a second, what are they talking about? You have parts of the Torah that are that way too. The Torah begins and tells you that when Adam was kicked out of the Garden of Eden, so then God put up a sword on the entrance of the Garden of Eden that was la tacherva mitapechet. The sharpness of the sword was constantly turning. What does that mean? You read about Jacob, and you read how Jacob meets up with a man in the middle of the night, and they have a fight, and then he sees he can't win him, and he says, let me go at sunrise, and he says, I won't let you go till you bless me. That's a funny thing to say when you just fought a man. So we have a tradition, it's all a fight with an angel, etc., but you read the verses, what's it talking about? Abraham has a vision, and he sees a bird, and he sees a bird wants to come down on the sacrifice, and a young dove, and God tells him, separate them, and Abraham chases away the big bird, the eagle, the vulture. What's that talking about? You have a pasuk in the Torah that describes how the elders see a vision of God, and under God's feet was blue. What? God's feet? Blue? What's going on? Obviously, you have these sections of Torah, which cannot be understood literally. You know the Torah means something else, and it's not telling you. So here too, we have a piece of Talmud where you read it, and on the surface, it seems to be, that's an interesting story. Like under God's feet, there's blue, like a blue stone, right? That's a nice story, but you know the Torah is telling you something else. So here too, we know the Talmud is telling us something else. But let's read the story at least on its simplistic level. It says like this, when we would go after Rabbi Yochanan to eat the fruits of Ginosar. And Ginosar is the area by the Kinneret. What's the Kinneret in English?
Galilee.
Okay. Kiavinan Beimea, when we'd be with 100 students, Manketinan lelecholchad dechad asara asara. Each student would pick 10. Vechiavinan Beya Sara, and when we'd be 10 students, Manketinan lecholchad dechad mea mea, each of us would pick 100. So, if they're 10, they each pick 100. 10 times 100, 1,000. So they're each bringing back for the rabbi 1,000. They're bringing back a total of 1,000 fruits. And every 100 of them would have a vessel that held 3 se'ah. That's a measurement of volume. And we'd eat it, and it was so delicious that after he'd eat this tremendous volume of fruits, he'd swear, I haven't eaten anything. Meaning when you eat something delicious, you can eat a lot of it and feel like you haven't yet eaten anything because it only whets your appetite. He hadn't eaten anything? He hadn't eaten anything that satiates. So, what's that talking about? Rav Yochanan ate so many fruits of Ginosar. That's what Rav Yochanan was all about. This holy man who compiled the Jerusalem Talmud was about eating sweet fruits. So obviously there's a secret here. It's not talking about fruits, and it's not talking about Galilee. And it's not talking about swearing whether he ate fruits or not. When you guys will learn Chassidut, you'll see that in Chassidut, Rav Nachman of Breslov has a whole deep insight as to what this whole Gemara is talking about. But we're learning the Gemara, we'll just see the stories, right? At our stage of the game, at least we should know the simple stories, right? So when we hit it by Rav Nachman Breslov, then we'll know what he's talking about. Rabbi Avu Achil, Rabbi Avu would eat of these fruit, Adavi Sharik Ledudva Me'afute. To the point where his skin would be so smooth from eating these fruits that when a fly would try to climb his face, it would slide down. Couldn't stay up on his face. Again, what's it talking about? So here, we know a little bit of insight, right? Face represents, what is panim in Hebrew? The insides, right? And zvuv represents, the zvuv always represents sin. Zavuv Mavet. Zavuv, the fly always represents death. The flies are always around the carcass. They always represent defilement, right? Flies always come when something starts to rot. Flies are always representative of that. So, on some level, he attained some spiritual height that the flies couldn't touch him. They'd slide off of him. But what it means, on a deeper level, okay, when we merit to understand more deeply. Ravami v'Ravasi havu achle adinatir mazayu. Ravami and Ravasi, they'd eat till their hair, they shed their hair. Okay, whatever that means. Rav Shimon, again, hair, we know that when a person purifies himself, he has to remove his hair. Hair is representative of defilement also, right? The Metzora has to shave his hair, the Nazir has to shave his hair. Different people in stages of purity have to remove hair. Rav Shimon ben Lakish ave achi la demarid. Rav Shimon ben Lakish ate it till he went insane. Going insane could mean literally, or going insane is sometimes a reference in Chazal to having prophecy. The prophet in Tanakh is sometimes called the insane one, because sanity is when I'm focused on balancing my physical with my spiritual. Insanity is when the physical doesn't interest me. What's an insane person defined as? As someone who hurts himself, someone who runs in the graveyard, sleeps in the graveyard at night, someone who runs around naked, someone who doesn't care to protect his physical self. So sometimes people who are exceptionally spiritual are also called insane because their physical doesn't interest them. V'amalu Rabbi Yochanan l'debei nesia v'avemshal le'le Rabbi Yehuda nesia baluche abatrei umayti le'le beite. So they'd have to send detectives to find Rav Shimon ben Lakish and bring him back home. Again, what is all of this talking about? So we don't know. This is an example of an area in Talmud that you read and you say, okay, there's something deeper going on here. One day I'll merit to understand. Kiata Rav Dimi. Now we're up to the top of page Ayin Vav. When Rav Dimi came, where's he coming from? Usually when it says Kiata, it means he came from Israel to Babylon. He's in the Babylonian Talmud, so it's telling you someone who came from Israel. Amar, he told us the following. Yanai, the king, had one city. Yanai was a king from the Herodian dynasty. So we know that in the story of Hanukkah, a little bit over 200 years before the destruction of the Second Temple, you had the Hasmoneans, Kohanim, who took over the temple. And then they had a servant named Herod, who heard a heavenly voice that said, whoever tries to rebel against the Hasmonean dynasty now will be successful. Herod said, that's a good thing to know. Now, before we continue, we have to know that a non-Jewish slave, Herod was an Edomite who became a Jewish slave. When someone becomes a slave of a Jew, we give him 12 months, and we tell him within this 12 months you have to decide. Do you want to become an Eved Kenani, a standardized non-Jewish slave? Then you will have to undergo circumcision, and you will have to go to mikvah, and you will become, just like you have a ger, you have a person who accepts all of Torah and mitzvot, he's a non-Jew who becomes Jewish, so you can have a non-Jew who becomes an Eved Kenani. He accepts all the mitzvot like a woman. He undergoes the identical process as a ger, only when we do the circumcision, we don't make a blessing, lamoles agerim, to circumcise the gerim, but rather lamoles avadim, to circumcise servants. And he then immerses in mikvah, and then he becomes responsible for all the mitzvot like a woman. And then if he ever gets freed, he becomes responsible for all mitzvot. So a slave, a non-Jew, who becomes a slave in a Jew's home, he becomes like a quasi-Jew. He becomes responsible for half of the mitzvot, or even more than half of the mitzvot. So this slave, Herod, he hears the heavenly voice, and so he takes up a sword and kills everyone in the Hasmonean family. Kills everyone. There's one girl left from the Hasmonean family, and she goes up on a rooftop and she says, if anyone ever tells you she's from the Hasmonean family, he's a slave, because there's no one left from my family. And then she jumps off the roof and commits suicide. And then we begin the Herodian dynasty, and he takes the throne. And he is, and his descendants are really from Edom. You know, they became Jewish through becoming slaves, but they're not really Jews, right? They never underwent the real gear. He became a slave who killed his masters, right? So one of his descendants was Yanai. Yanai was the king towards the end of the second temple. And he had a city, Behar HaMelech, in this area called Har HaMelech, Shayu motzim nimena shishim libo saflei tirid lekotzetzei teni me'ev Shabbat le'ev Shabbat. They used to take out 600,000, over half a million, vessels filled with tuna, and they would feed them to the people. This one city, on this place called Har HaMelech, this one city would produce every week over 500,000 cans of tuna to give to eat to the people who harvested the figs. So you understand how many figs were growing there. This was food once a week for the people harvesting the figs. Kiata Ravin, when Rabbi Avin came from Israel, Amar, he said, Ilanecha de'alo li'anai ha'melech be'ar ha'melech. Yanai ha'melech had on this place called Har HaMelech, he had one tree, Shayu moridin mimenu, 40 se'ah gozalot, migimel brichot bechodesh. Every month, they take three groupings doesn't say what type of bird, and they'd be able to take down figure 40 se'ah. That's approximately, every se'ah is about, a se'ah is 6 kav, a kav is the volume of 24 eggs, so a kav is about 2 soda bottles, so a se'ah is, let's say, a box of 6 soda bottles, no, it's 2 boxes of 6 soda bottles, and they take down 40, so 80 boxes of soda. 6 times 8, 480 soda bottles, that's the volume. Okay, 480 soda bottles every month of little pigeons. That's the volume of meat they'd get off this one tree. Every month, they take down the volume of 480 soda bottles. You guys figure that? 480, we said that's about 40 boxes. Figure how much volume that is. That's what? More. This whole bookcase times 3, times 4, yeah? That volume full of pigeon meat, yeah. One tree. So the simple reading is the Talmud is telling us how they were flourishing economically before the destruction of the Second Temple. There's obviously a deeper meaning here. Kiata Rabbi Yitzchak Amar, when Rabbi Yitzchak came from Israel to Babylon, he said, Irachat hayta be'eretz Yisrael, there was a city in Israel. V'gufnit shma, its name was Gufnit, Shayu ba 80 zugot achim kohanim, they had 80 pairs of brothers who were kohanim, nesuim ne'shmonim zugot achayot kohanot, and they were each married to pairs of sisters, 80 pairs of sisters, kohanos. Now you understand that no one was looking to make a feat of two brothers marrying two sisters. So what he's saying is they had such a huge population of kohanim that by coincidence, you know how often they have two brothers marrying two sisters? By coincidence, these coincidences happened 80 times. So you have to imagine how many brothers marry sisters and how many of them are kohanim. So you have to figure, it's a 1 in 1,000 that this happens, let's say. So if you have 80 pairs like this, that means that you had 80,000 sets of brothers and sisters getting married in that city. And I think it's less than 1 in 1,000. I think it's more like 1 in 10,000. How many people do you know that two brothers are married to two sisters? I just heard of, right? Think of all the people you know. Thousands of people that you know, and you've heard of one, but not that you even know. So, and then they're kohanim. And now after the destruction of the temple, the rabbis checked from Surah to Narda. They wanted to find, where do you find pairs of brothers married to pairs of sisters, kohanim? And the only thing pair that they could find, looking through thousands of pairs of couples married, right? They could find Balmibante de Rav Chisda, the two daughters of Rav Chisda. They were married to two brothers, and Rav Chisda was a kohen, but the husbands weren't kohanim. Meaning they looked for a pair. Where could you find the pair? So we mentioned that Rav Chisda was a kohen, and the only pair they could find were Rav Chisda's daughters, the Abu Nas bin Lechami bar Chama ulo Maruk bar Chama. They were married to the two brothers, the sons of bar Chama. V'avagav de'inu ava kahanta, and even though Rav Chisda's daughters were daughters of a kohen, they were kohanos, inu lava kohani, their husbands were brothers, but they weren't kohanim. So the rabbis couldn't find one pair. So how? What are the odds that you find a pair of two brothers married to two sisters? The two brothers are kohanim, the two sisters are kohanim. And there in that city they had 80 pairs. So that just shows you the numbers of people that lived in that city. Now you have to figure, the city housed a tremendous number. 500,000 people, 1 million people, I don't know. You know, here in Jerusalem we have how many people? 600,000. I don't know, we're up there. The numbers are going up. And I don't know if we have even one, you know, a set of two brothers kohanim married to two sisters kohanos. So that's what the Gemara is trying to show us, how big the numbers were in Israel before the destruction of the temple. And in the last 2 decades, archaeologists took the Talmud's numbers, where the Talmud describes huge numbers of people living in the cities in the time before the destruction of the Second Temple, and they compared it to their findings archaeologically. And up until the last decade and a half, they couldn't find support for this. Meaning all the cities they found seemed to be small. So they assumed there was exaggerations. And recently they've started finding support for these claims. Recently they started finding support that there were really tremendous numbers here in Israel, much bigger than we can imagine. Meaning millions and millions of people lived here in Israel. Amar Rabbi Yanai, and we just discussed, who's Rabbi Yanai? Rabbi Yanai was Rabbi Yochanan's Rebbe in the land of Israel. Amar Rabbi Yanai, Amar Rav. Now they're giving us medical advice, and again, and here we have to apply what we said earlier, that the medical advice of the Talmud is not something we should try at home. Anything that is the volume of an egg, we explained this. We went into depth. We said, A, we don't understand what they were saying, and B, everything about our lives changed. Now, our chickens aren't like their chickens. They're not dancing around. They're eating different feed. Our diets are different. Our animals' diets are different. Our schedules are different. Everything about our lives are different. Meaning everything we find in the Talmud, that the Talmud discusses their lives and the nature of their lives, we find we're different. The Talmud discusses when they went to sleep, we don't go to sleep then. When they woke up, we don't wake up then. What they ate, we don't eat what they ate. Nothing we eat is like what they ate. Our bread isn't the same bread they ate. Our water is not the same water they drank. Think of the things that go into our water, think of the things that went into their water. And all of this affects things. I mean, one of the issues we have today with fertility, we have a lot of fertility issues today, right? So one of the issues the Talmud says in their day and age, a woman would see her period like a clock. She knew down to the second when she was getting her period. That was the standard woman. Today, it's 1 in 1,000, 1 in 10,000 that you find a woman who has a set period down to the day, forget to the minute. I don't know if we have women today who are down to the minute. One of the things we do, if we try to help a couple with fertility, one of the first pieces of advice we'll give them is try to get on a normal schedule. Have breakfast at the same time every day, supper at the same time every day, go to sleep at the same time every day, and wake up at the same time every day. And in over 20% of the cases, it works. That helps the woman set her biological clock, those couples that really do it, and she starts having a set period, like in the days of the Talmud. Here's a small change, and here we see how it can make a big impact on over a fifth of the population. So everything about our lives is different than their lives. Look at us. You ask the average person, when was sunset today? We don't have a clue. When was sunrise today? We don't have a clue. They lived by this. Their whole lives were more in tune with nature. The Talmud says some women would have their period exactly at sunrise. And it would shift every month, you know, with sunrise. But when your life rotates around the sun, so then, well, other things also rotate around the sun. So our diets are different, and everything about our lives are different. And already 600 years ago, the sages of the Tosfos said that the Talmud's medicine stopped working on them. Their lives were different than the Talmud. The Tosfos says, our nature is very different than the nature of the rabbis and the devas of the Talmud. Don't go trying the medicine of the rabbis and the Talmud. So today, if we take what they said, we have to apply it tenfold. So Rav Yanai said a piece of advice. He said in the name of Rav. But we said, we don't apply this practically. Kol shuka beitza, beitza tova mimenu. Anything that is the volume of an egg, you should know that an egg is more healthy than that. Kiata Ravin, when Ravin came from Israel to Babylon, Amar, he said, Tava biata megulgalta, eating a cooked egg, a baked egg, is better, mishita kaisi sulta, than 6 cups of flour. You're better off eating a cooked egg than eating 6 cups of flour. If you roast the egg, again, if you roast it and you soft roast it, we don't even do that, right? Kiata Rav Dimi Amar, when Rav Dimi came, he said another virtue of eggs, but remember, they were talking about different eggs than us, right? They roasted their eggs. We don't roast our eggs. Roast on a fire. You put it straight in the fire. Okay, we don't do that. I'm saying here's a small example of a difference. You know, the Talmud discusses that eating garlic on Friday night is good for you. It gives a person more sperm. Okay, but you have to know whether the Talmud was talking about roasted garlic or cooked garlic or baked garlic. The Talmud differentiates, but you have to know what the Talmud's talking about. Kiata Rav Dimi Amar, when Rav Dimi came from Israel, he said, Tava beata megulgalta, meshita, metvita, midaled, mevushalta, eating a roasted egg is better than eating, when you eat a roasted egg, Rashi says it's hard, hard roasted, that's better than eating six eggs that were roasted soft and 4 eggs that were cooked. Okay? So, kol shuka beitza, beitza tova imenu, lebal mebisra. Anything that's the volume of an egg is better than an egg other than meat. That's then. Okay? So we heard the virtues of eggs. So in their days, this was practical. You know, they didn't know about cholesterol. They didn't know that they knew certain things, and they were very good in medicine for their day and age. You see, they cured all kinds of things, and some things they couldn't cure. You know, the Talmud discusses if a person has a certain disease, you give him a certain food, not because he'll live from it, but it'll give him a little bit longer to live, and maybe he'll get a few words out. He'll have some kind of will to say to his family. Some things they couldn't cure, some things we can't cure. So. So, but okay, this is where we have to stop. It's time for my room.